2020.
Trying to tap into another system as an experiment. Let's see how we do. Let me make that telephone call to see if I can get in.
And the world. So centered in pure being, we are a healing presence.
And so it is. Thank you for a wonderful affirmation to get us started here this morning. I'm going to turn it over to you, Karen, to introduce our guest this morning, Karen Creasy, Lady Tycoon.
Good morning, billionaire family. Today we have the honor of having the Honorable Hubert L. Grimes, Esquire, with us. He is a judge, an author, professor, college president, entrepreneur, and a man of God. From schools to colleges, prisons to churches, recovering addicts to law students, judges to air traffic controllers, retired Judge Hubert L. Grimes leaves a powerful message of hope, history, and encouragement to each of his audiences. Drawing upon contemporary research, as well as experiences from his small-town upbringing, through his journey to become the first black judge in the history of Daytona Beach, St. Augustine area, his message to young and old, wealthy and poor, educated and uneducated is the same. You can fulfill your purpose of or dream as long as you never give up. No matter the obstacle, the challenge, or the circumstance, each of us can fulfill our dreams of success if we are willing to set goals, discipline ourselves, and diligently work until we succeed. Each of us has a unique package, even identical twins, unlike any other person on the planet, who is called upon to make their respective contributions to this season of life. If one fails to use his talent, the world will be deprived of the unique benefit that only comes from that individual. Whether dealing with the 30-minute message or the 3-day workshop, his message is always clear, compelling, and affirming. Hubert has been the managing partner right now in Montz Grimes Law in Daytona Beach. He was the interim president of Bethune-Cookman and also the first black judge in Volusia County. He's also an ordained minister. He's the author of a book, and he had been with us about 10 years ago when he had wrote a book about how to keep your child from going to jail, restoring parental authority, and developing successful youth. He also has another book called Perspectives. No one can take away what you have between your ears. And he's also in process of writing his third book right now. But we are so, so honored to have the Honorable Hubert Grimes with us this morning. He is my friend, my prayer partner, our prayer leader on our nightly prayer line. And I'm just so excited to have him here with us today. Being a Joe, I know I'm ready. I truly believe our family's ready. So let's just go, go, go. Mic check, Hubert, you there?
I'm here, Karen. Good morning.
Awesome. Let me turn it over to you. Thank you so much.
Well, certainly thank you for the opportunity and the invitation to be able to share a few words with you this morning and to this beautiful audience. Indeed, as Billionaire Joe said at the outset, it's another day, a beautiful day, and every day that we have, when we see that sun rising out there, we should be grateful. You know, earlier this morning on the our 6:25 prayer line call that Lorraine hosts, Pastor Bracy, Bobby Bracy, said that I was talking about gratitude and how we must be grateful for there's so many things. In fact, if you start making a list of all the things that you're grateful for, it will generally take your mind off of any negativity or any other kind of challenge that you might be going through. And it will, in fact, help refocus you, redirect you redirect that energy to a more positive space. And so I'm grateful this morning to be able to come and to just share a few words. Karen kind of gave me some latitude this morning in terms of what we can talk about. But, you know, in light of the trying times that we are going through, I want to sort of set the stage initially, and then I'm going to pull some matters, some things from my first book that I think will help kind of stir your thoughts up this morning. Again, because of the trying times that we're going through, and how do we make a way out of the situation and circumstances that we find ourselves. You know, when we think about it, I was thinking about the fact that we're going through multiple pandemics right now. Yes, we have the pandemic of the disease that has afflicted not only our country, but has afflicted the world. But here in America, we've got the pandemic of racism that is well over, you know, it's 400 years old and it's still there. We thought it had been buried some years ago, but it has risen its ugly head up again, and we've seen it in the form of improper treatment of the sons and daughters of the diaspora. We see it with the improper treatment by law enforcement officers who seem to think that it's a game of shooting and killing black people. And so that second pandemic is still just racist. You know, we're seeing a weather pandemic. My goodness, we pray for the people that are in the down in the Gulf, down near Houston and down near in Louisiana corridor, because they're beset down even as we speak with some powerful hurricanes. And those of us who live here in Florida recognize that hurricanes are no joke. We have a hurricane season each year, and from June to November, we are, you know, at any point in time, you know, these storms can form and they end up causing significant damage. We just pray that we'll have a quiet season, and it's been a busy season so far, but we're grateful here in Florida that we've not gotten hit directly by any of them, and yet it's still early in the game, so we thank, again, that's why we said we thank God every day for another day. And a beautiful day. And so our prayers go out to the people there in the Texas and Louisiana, even up into Arkansas and some other places that they're projecting that this thing is going to curve and curve even possibly back east. So let's just be mindful of it. If you're in that corridor, be aware of what's going on in the weather predictions, and please take appropriate measures to protect you and your family. You don't want to be out there in the midst of that storm chaos, in effect, without having the essentials, whether it be the protection of shelter or whether it be after the storm has gone, those essentials that will help you to get through it all. And then if you are, once you get through it, then we've got to look out for one another. You know, that's the other part of this piece that we're learning from and being reminded of, things that we in America have sometimes taken for granted. Going back to what Pastor Bracey said this morning, we have to be grateful. You know, anybody that looked at that RNC convention last night, and I don't come to you this morning as in a political term, but I'm neither Democrat nor Republican. I am, in fact, an independent. But when I looked at some of the things that were being said, it just made me kind of shudder to think that, you know, we can all have so many different perspectives, but looking at the same set of facts. And I say that because we're in a political pandemic, too, where there's a pandemic of leadership in this country, and we see that there it's problematic. And while those who are in charge seem to think that all is well, just like I guess it was Nero that played his fiddle, you know, but it is not well. It is a pandemic in this political season. And then, of course, we also know that there's the resulting situation that has occurred from the first one. The disease has caused a pandemic of unemployment for many and a pandemic of resources. And, you know, the question must be asked, am I my brother's keeper? How do we address these various pandemics? And even in people's personal lives, many people have now, you know, given up hope, and others are just struggling trying to make it. And so I sort of wrap my comments around that whole notion that we're in a season that is difficult. But as again, as Billionaire Joe said at the outset, the sun still rises. And from the place where I'm sitting at right now, my space here at the house, I can the sun is coming through the windows from the east, and it's creating a very beautiful image for me to, again, recognize that we are blessed, my friends. No matter what we're going through, we are blessed. And so I say that as a prelude to some of my comments this morning, and I'm going to also ask to reserve some time for any questions that you may have. But I do want to echo a couple things about these pandemics, and one of which is after looking at that political pandemic, as I call it, with the president and his people and the glorification of what they were saying, everything they said about this gentleman was that, you know, he was such a great man and all these great things he had done. And I want each of you to recognize the importance then of your vote. Your vote in this upcoming, whether it be if you've already had your state's primary, which we did here in Florida last week, or whether your primary is yet to come, and certainly the general election is right around the corner, November 3rd, I want to just encourage you, do not become weary and not vote. Do not allow people to hold your vote hostage. Do not think that it's not important. And convey that message not only to our generation. I'm in the over 60 category. I'm called a senior citizen now. But I would say to us that it's so important that we pass that on to our children, our grandchildren, to this millennial generation who may not yet understand the true fight that went on for the right to vote. And so I want to echo that at the outset this morning, because when you look back and think about it, we could be even worse than we are. I heard some of them, I guess it was the vice president last night, say that 4 more years of Donald Trump will help make this country great again. And my thinking is 4 more years could really cause even further harm to people of color and people who have traditionally been left out. So I started thinking back when somebody, Juan Williams, the author who also, I think he's a commentator on Fox. I heard him being interviewed by Joe Madison on Sirius XM. And, this is going back a couple years. He wrote a book taking the title that Trump used at the beginning of his race back in 2016 when he spoke to Black Americans and said, "What the hell do you have to lose?" And Juan Williams wrote a book with that same title. And it says Trump's War on Civil Rights. And it goes back to the real question that we must be faced with today, that there are many who say, well, things are going great, and man, it's going to be all right. And if, my law partner a few days ago had a call with, had a conference, well, actually a conversation with one of his childhood friends. And his childhood friend was promoting the idea that he thought Trump was, had done a phenomenal job. And I said, it's so amazing how we can see so many different things based on the same set of facts. But in the course of this political pandemic, can it get any worse than what it is? And I will say to you that it can. I deem myself as a self-taught historian, going back to my college days under the influences of one of John Hope Franklin's contemporaries, a gentleman by the name of Dr. Henry Ellis Cheney, both of whom got their PhDs together at the University of Chicago. And one of the things that we've learned through this process is not only can it get worse, I truly believe that it will if we don't step up and use our power of the ballot. 1876, let me take you back for a moment. I'm going to circle back out here to the contemporary days, but following the Civil War, we know that the passage of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments occurred, and during those times, the 13th abolished slavery, the 14th made Black folks citizens and gave us equal protection under the law and due process, and then the 15th, of course, gave us the right to vote, gave Black men the right to vote. But the Black women were excluded, as you know, up until the fact they're just celebrating now 100 years ago where black women were given the right, but it was an additional fight. Well, I'm not going to go down that road just yet. I'll put a pin in that one. But the point is that from 1865 until 1876, there was massive growth amongst the former slaves in this country. We began to hold political office. We began to own land. We began to make significant progress. And this is in a roughly about a 10-year window. Well, there were many former plantation owners and former enslavers who didn't like that because they saw themselves going backwards, and so they saw these blacks, making progress, too much progress for them. And so along came the disputed election of 1876, where Samuel Tilden and Rutherford B. Hayes ended up in a dead heat where neither could get the necessary 270 votes for the Electoral College to declare one to be the presidential race. And so after the third vote ballot, you know what happens is if you can't do it in Electoral College, then it shifts over to the House of Representatives. And so what happened is that there was, after the third ballot in the House, there was a deal cut. And the deal said that was cut was that the Southern Democrats would go along with Hayes being named as the Republican president, with the deal being that Hayes would withdraw the federal troops from the South. And the federal troops had been the ones that were enforcing the new laws, not only the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, but also enforcing fair treatment of black Americans in the South. And that's why we had been able to make significant progress during that season. Well, part of that deal that was cut, they withdrew those federal troops from the South. And it didn't take long after that for the rise of the Ku Klux Klan and all these other white hate groups came about. They began to then, they recaptured their state legislators because they've made it more difficult to vote. Isn't that interesting? We're seeing that phenomenon again. And in making it difficult to vote, they came up with things like poll taxes at the local level, because voting and elections are deemed to be a state activity, not a federal activity. We have federal oversight to make sure that they're handled fairly, but it is a state activity. So they came up with these various states in the South, came up with different ways of trying to disenfranchise black Americans, the poll taxes being one, that you had to pay money in order to be able to be eligible to vote. They had the ones involving literacy, which meant that can you count the number of, can you tell me how many jelly beans are in a big gallon jar? And of course, whatever number you said was going to be wrong. There were also those things like land ownership that had to be established. You had to be a landowner in order to vote. And then there was the white-only primary that they had, which allowed them, the only way you could vote in the primary was if you were white. And then another, which was that if you were black and you attempted to vote, you're oftentimes, if you were working for any company that was owned by a white man, oftentimes you were intimidated, harassed, and possibly even killed for even wanting to register to vote, let alone carrying out the act of voting. So all these things emerged after the disputed election of 1876. If there had been even more people, and believe it or not, there was a significant turnout, something like 70% of black Americans actually voted, particularly in the South, voted during those elections. But still, it was almost similar to what we saw with Bush v. Gore back in 2000, where it was only a 537-vote difference between the election of Bush versus what would have been the election of Gore. And unfortunately, that took place here in the state of Florida, because whichever way Florida went in the Electoral College column would determine who the next president would be. And so I bring all that historic stories, and I know you all think I may be going different multiple ways this morning, but that's okay. I want to make a broad picture for you that the importance of voting transcends everything else that we are doing. And in a season of pandemics where people are staying at home, afraid to go out, or they're taking the CDC's recommendation and avoiding large crowds, these things become even more crystal clear. You want to know why the president named someone to try to help dismantle the effectiveness of the U.S. Postal Service? It was so that they could, once again, they could cram down the vote. They said they don't like, he doesn't like vote by mail, yet he uses vote by mail himself. And he and many of his own, his cabinet officials and colleagues, they use it and have been using it. Many people have been using vote by mail for 20, 30 years. Some states, it's just a matter of routine. Having served as a member of the canvassing board while being a county judge back in the 90s, I can tell you how that process works. And you basically certify that these elections are true and honest. And that, you know, if you have a problem with a particular ballot, they look at the ballot to determine if they can ascertain the voter's intent. And if you can ascertain the voter's intent, then it's counted. You know, sometimes people leave a signature off or the signature doesn't look the same. And so they talk about possibility of fraud in these elections, but the possibility of fraud is very, very minuscule, very minuscule. And so for him to use this as his cause to live and to be able to try to take people and literally to try once again to discredit the elections even before they're handled is just another typical example of what we call voter suppression. And so circling back around to my point, it's very important that each and every one of us exercise our franchise. Exercise your voting franchise and also have your family members, your friends to do the same. If you're staying at home during this season, pick the phone up and call somebody, text somebody, remind them to register. They can still register. Some states have same-day registration and voting. Others, on the other hand, require you to have your registration in place by 30 days prior to the election. In either case, you've got time to register for the November election right now. And please, there is a 1-800 number for those people who need to register and may not have. I don't have that number, but I'll get with Karen and give that to her. But you can Google it, and it will give you the that number that is being circulated. And yes, there are many people that are part of the election protection teams. Black lawyers, many of whom are part of the National Bar Association and other groups that are doing that in order to make sure that there's a fair and safe election is carried out. But my suggestion is go ahead and order your ballots. If you're in a state that requires you, as they do in Florida, to request your absentee ballot, go ahead and do so. And that way when it arrives, you can fill it out. And then my suggestion would be that you, rather than mailing it back, that you hand deliver it back to the supervisor of elections office in your community. And you can find out where that is. Usually there's a phone numbers that are attached on the back of the ballot that will tell you where to call and who to talk with, and hand deliver it, or have your child, your son, your adult child to hand deliver it. Now, you can't go out and collect ballots, but you can certainly deliver the ones that you're responsible for. But check with your supervisor of elections office to make sure where their drop-off boxes are going to be, where they're, so that you can make sure that it doesn't have to be handled by the U.S. Postal Service. You can make sure in your own mind that it got there. And we all understand what we're expecting. I want you to, in this upcoming time, and why it's so important that each of us make sure that we exercise the right to vote. And that goes back again to why these pandemics. How are we going to change them? We're going to change it by each person voting one at a time. Can it get worse? Yes. If the disputed election of 1876 resulted in the problems that set black people back 100 years. Do you know that it took almost 100 years for us to recover from that one election? I'm going to let that sink in for a moment. Almost 100 years. We had to go through the Supreme Court decisions like Brown, Plessy v. Ferguson in 1896, separate but equal. Fast forward, it took us all the way until 1954 to get an election that said separate but equal was unconstitutional, and that was done by the Warren Court. And yet, even after that decision in 1954, it was all the way up to 1969 before desegregation of our public schools. I'm for certain here in Florida and many places throughout the country, even after that began to take place. So it took us 100 years to recover from that decision in the 1876 disputed election. That's why voting is important. No vote, no vote is considered to be a wasted vote. The only time it's wasted is if you don't. And the thing that we have to hope for in this election is that there'll be those who will go out and vote, vote for the, you know, such as Kanye West, you know, who we know has a snowball chance in August in Florida of winning this election, or even for that matter, even winning is one thing and governing is something else. Even Trump found that out. And be advised that there are people within the Trump organization who are helping him as another method of trying to, again, quash the vote, quash the effectiveness of black voters. If black voters turn out the way we did for the election of President Obama back in 2008 and again in 2012, then they know for a fact that that Mr. Trump will be leaving the office. There may be many of you who have been blessed by some of his decisions on taxes. You've been blessed to some extent, but at the same time, there are many other rights that we're concerned about. None of them have said anything about the major protests going on in the country regarding the deaths of people like George Floyd or the more recent death that took place, police shooting that took place on tape there in Wisconsin, or about Breonna Taylor in Louisville, or about any of these other horrible shootings that have taken place. They haven't said anything about that, but they are saying that they want to impose law and order. Now, those of you that may have been around back in the late 60s, early 70s, know that that was a catchphrase of Richard Nixon, to impose law and order. And what that basically means is that your civil rights could be taken away from you. They could declare, the president could declare martial law in an effort at trying to utilize the troops in our country. And, you know, typically there's a law that's called the Posse Comitatus Act that goes back to the early 1800s. It says you cannot use troops for law enforcement purposes. You can use them, if you notice in the middle of storms and things like that, they use National Guardsmen, but they're not troops. But he has already talked about sending troops into cities, and he always talks about cities that are run by the radical left Democrats. You know, that those terminologies we didn't hear in our country until just since the last election. But it's creating more division and strife. So we talk about these pandemics. We're talking about, again, this political pandemic that we're dealing with. Let us not take it for granted. Let us not undercut it or believe that these things cannot happen. Because, again, if it happened during the time of 1876 and took us 100 years to recover, my Lord, can you imagine if we had to go back? And there are those in this country who believe that they saw black people moving fast, just like they did between the period of time of 1865 and 1876, and they said they had to put a stop to it by any means necessary. And so there are those forces of darkness that still believe that even now, and that the righteous cause of blacks and browns and good white folks that and other ethnic minorities, there are those who would like to crush that. They would like to crush that movement. They would prefer us not to work together. They prefer us to be divided, because if they can get us divided, one against the other, even the races one against the other, then we know that there will be our effectiveness will be diminished and their effectiveness will be increased. So those are the kinds of things that we want to be conscious of as we move into the next phase of the next season of our lives. I would really like to have Karen has mentioned to me that I could we can look at doing something else maybe down the road, and we're working on some calendar dates. But I thought that in the importance of the times that we live in right now, the pandemic of, as I pointed out, of where all these things come together, you've heard the phrase a perfect storm. But my God, this is what we're seeing right now is indeed a perfect storm, and we don't want to be a part of that perfect storm. So I want to echo back to you, how do we deal with these various pandemics? We deal with them, one, the health pandemic. We deal with it by following the guidelines, whether it be social distancing or wearing your mask or keeping your body strong, with you know, keeping your immune system strong on the front end, you know, and so all the social distancing things that they've talked about, but at the same time, you know, using good common sense. How do we deal with the storm pandemic that's out there? You know, we acknowledge the fact that it is a storm, a major storm, major. In fact, they were saying it could rise up to a Category 4 before it hit landfall last night, this morning. And so what do? Yes, we pray, but we also prepare. And we also know that we support those who are going through it, whether they're going through it as a first responder or whether it be people who have been victimized. We help them any way that we can. And we also stay aware, we stay woke to be able to make sure that if we're in the path of such storms, that we take whatever precautions we can to make sure that those things are, that we're protected from them. And then, of course, the political pandemic that we spoke of, that political pandemic requires us to vote. That is the best tonic for resolving these issues, vote, and bring as many other people. Most of us have at some point are either heavily involved in network marketing, so we know the power of the network is that you bring one, you bring two, and each one of them duplicates themselves. And in so doing, the same is true about voting. If you as one can now bring two, and those two can each duplicate themselves again, then we can see the power of the vote, and we can help make this country not make it great again, because that was actually code words being used. And for many people, particularly people of color who don't understand that, I implore you, understand that America, making America great again, was a code. It was a code word for make America white again, make its leadership, you know, because they saw again, like again, I made the statement historically, they saw this happening between the period of 1865 and 1876, that blacks were rising rapidly. You've been gifted and with various creative talents and skill sets, and they were putting those things to use. And here we are again, 100-plus years later, and you're seeing the election of a black president. You saw attorney generals for the country. You saw, you know, people that now all of a sudden reactivated and re-envisioned dreams, so that if Barack Obama could do it, then how many other young people could believe themselves to be able to achieve? And it was true across the board. I mean, governors and senators and the like. So how do you stop that? You start, you change the mindset. You get people, you disrupt, and you cause chaos. And we've seen a lot of chaos in these last 4 years. And so it's important that we change that. We eliminate this pandemic by the antidote for this pandemic is to get out and vote and take as many people with you. Don't have to stand in lines like they did out in Wisconsin if you'll do it the right way, which is request your ballot early, make sure you mark your ballot properly, follow the instructions to a T, and then now you or someone you very close to in your family will deliver the ballots back to your supervisor's office so that indeed they can be properly counted. And if you'll do that, we can end these pandemics. And if we'll continue doing all the other things that are essential, prayer, daily involvement in our communities, talking with our kids, reminding them of our history, reminding them of our potential destiny, if we will do what we're supposed to do. But if we don't do it, then we may find ourselves in far worse shape than we could ever have imagined. Because those code words, every time I see them or hear them, I shake my head, because I realize it's a code. Unfortunately, there are many people, good folks within the party that don't even get it. But they don't understand that what these people, what the leaders are talking about, is something far different than what they may be talking about. So I pray that you all, that what I shared this morning will be helpful to you and encourage you, and that it will help you to have a great day. I'll turn it back over to you, Karen, and if you would like me to be available for some questions, I'll do that. And if not, I just want to bid you a great day.
Wow, thank you so much, Judge Grimes. Thank you so much. Just to give us that ability and obvious awareness to, you know, that our vote certainly count, and, of course, the historical context of, you know, the power of our vote. So, obviously, we have questions for you. I'll perhaps start off, you know, the some questions here. And what is the relevance of, you know, the sporting arena sort of, you know, letting their voice be heard in this, you know, craziness?
Right, right.
Make sure I got you. You said, what is the relevance of making our voices heard?
Yeah, how, you know, or the significance perhaps is a better question.
Yes.
You know, the significance of this.
Well, you know, it seems like my home state of Florida has always, it's now become the example for many of these challenges. I mentioned to you all that back in 2000, the Bush v. Gore election, that Florida's victory margin was 537 votes. That's less than one vote per precinct. We got 67 counties in Florida, but that's less than one vote. I mean, and then we got, but yet we got hundreds of, we've got thousands of precincts. If people who had not stayed home that day had come out and voted, then we would have seen a whole different dynamic. Would Gore have been a better president? I know his policies would have been different, particularly as it relates to things like climate change. And one of the things that we're seeing now is the effect of that 20 years later, you know, because these examples, these hurricanes that we are witnessing have become stronger. And a lot of that, and if you look at any studies that are being performed, legitimate scientific studies are showing that the temperature of the earth is rising because of carbon emissions. And we're seeing that some of the polar caps are starting to melt. And if that happens, we're going to see the oceans rise, and we're going to see flooding, and we see these intense storms. You take it all the way back to the fact that if 538 people had voted in Florida differently in 2000, 20 years ago, we may not be seeing that same effect today, not to mention all the other issues that would have hopefully been addressed during the course of that time. So does our vote count? Absolutely. Every last one of them is important. So even if you've got a son or grandson or granddaughter who may be, you know, they may, at this point in their life, they may be more focused upon, you know, being a fan of Megan Thee Stallion or Cardi B, you know, yeah, it's okay to have fun, but they got to remember that their vote, if they're over the age of 18, their vote will count, not only for them with the immediate effect, but like I said, 20 years down the road, we will be feeling the effect of this election, if not longer.
Yes, that's a profound answer right there. We could feel the effects of this election for literally decades, if not more, you know,
yes,
centuries. Let's open up for some more questions.
Can
you
hear me, Russell?
My name is muted.
Do you have any questions for or comments on this?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Judge Grimes. I'd love to hear this history again and again and never tire of it because I know the power of our vote. I was in jail on parole now, and I just learned in New York last year or so, the governor passed and the Senate and legislature passed a bill that says if I'm on parole, I can vote. But many people don't know this, and we know it's different in each state. What about in your state? And isn't it amazing that the only two states that let you vote in jail are Maine and Vermont? Because I think it's a federal right, and we need to change that as well. But what are the rights for people who are on parole or have been in jail?
Well, again, you're right. It is a state-by-state law. The even though I would concur with you, I think the rights of each person should be respected. I don't think that just the mere fact that you have, you know, committed a criminal offense should bar you from voting. And so in Florida, what has happened is that the citizens of Florida passed a constitutional amendment back in 2018. I have to get my years right. They passed a constitutional amendment, and that granted returning citizens, in other words, those who had been convicted felonies, that had served time in prison, or that were, you know, placed on, they were adjudicated but guilty, but placed on probation for any type of felony, that under Florida law, they automatically lose their rights to vote. And the only way you get them back is that you've got to go through a process before the parole commission. And that is a slow process. That is a process that is antiquated at best. And so the citizens passed overwhelmingly by it. You have to have a 60% margin of 60% margin of victory for any type of constitutional amendment. And it passed overwhelmingly. Well, I don't think that the politicians were prepared for that. And so now they've got all of these potential voters, and many of whom will probably vote Democratic, is what their concern is. So our Republican-led legislature and the governor decided that they would do whatever they could to try to thwart that implementation. So they did. They passed the what they call enabling legislation that said that in order for the person to be able to still vote, they had to pay off all their fines and costs. And many of the guys and ladies that are coming back, you know, they don't have a job. They don't have opportunity for employment. And so it's going to be very difficult for them to pay off fines and costs. Secondly, a lot of these things are not even known what that amount might be, because the records were not carried out. I mean, the clerks of court might have entered a judgment, but you'd have to go into each place where you might have been received a conviction to get that information, and it might have also included costs that go to the, in like for example, in Florida, man, the costs, these costs are divvied up. They might impose court costs of on a case, there might be $750, but $2.50 goes to one fund, and $3 goes to another fund, and $6 goes to another. So you can immediately see that it becomes problematic. So now that case, the ACLU and other groups, NAACP, filed suit against that state law. It was overturned by the federal district judge that said that, no, the citizens of Florida have spoken, and they said you could, if a person has completed their sentence, then they should be given the right to vote again, and without having these added costs added to it. And while the language of the original amendment did not say that, that is something that the through the, what should I call it, the machinations of the legislators and the Republican leadership decided they could put that additional hurdle there. Well, the district judge in Tallahassee said no, that was that was against the Constitution to impose poll taxes on their right to vote. Just like you couldn't do the same thing for someone who was not a convicted felon. So right now the case is on appeal. It went up to the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, and which agreed with the trial judge that they wanted to even put an injunction in place to say, well, do not let this become effective for this election. And then they took it up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court issued a stay on the trial judge's ruling. So now that will keep a lot of individuals from voting in this upcoming election, to the benefit of whom? You know who. And so when they finally hear this case, it probably won't be until sometime next year before ruling is issued from the 11th Circuit. And unfortunately, you want to know the importance of the president who we get put in office. They bragged last night that they had appointed over 200 conservative judges nationwide. And if they get a chance, put him back in, he's going to appoint even more. And even more importantly, the balance of power on the U.S. Supreme Court will certainly go in favor of a very conservative court, which in the past, remember I said to you that 1876, you ended up then, not only did they remove the troops, but you ended up with a very conservative court, and that court implemented Plessy v. Ferguson, and it took from 1896 to 1954 for that to be overturned. And then from there, another 20 years roughly before it could be implemented properly. With all deliberate speed was what they told us in 1954. I was born in 53, but guess what? I was in college by the time it was in high school, 1969, almost finishing high school before we ended up seeing that thing implemented. It's a long response to your answer, I mean, to your question, but the point again is being made that it's very important. And here in our circuit, our clerk of court and the state attorney have basically taken a position that they're not going to try to stop people from, who are returning citizens, from signing up for registering to vote, because they don't have the capability to be able to figure it out. And we also were able to get the chief judge to agree to an order that would allow them to convert any monies due into community service hours. So there are different jurisdictions that are working to try to help, but at the same time, we're still fighting an uphill battle with the people who are in the courts now, and those people were, many of those same people were appointed by none other than President Trump.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. This is Flowers, by the way. Over here, they call me
Flowers.
Flowers. And many Republicans said, when they asked them, why are you voting for Trump when you know what a horrible person he is, they said, because we get the Supreme Court. That was their answer. And you know how sick Ruth Bader Ginsburg is and whoever else. But that is so key as well, and which is why I'm still fighting to change the 13th Amendment to abolish slavery, except when we've been convicted. That's why we have such a slave population. We move, I believe, to mass incarceration. But thank you so much. And listen, everybody needs to repeat this message to everybody and have everyone listen to this today. I do believe they'll understand voter suppression. Why is it so important for them to suppress our vote? Because they know we're right and we'll win. And put these, the only way they can win is by cheating and stealing and lying.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Hey, Josh.
Good morning.
This is billionaire Cloud Dancer Jabari. I have a question. So how you mentioned taking your ballot in directly to the, I guess, the Board of Elections. So now what guarantees do we have doing that our votes will still be counted? I ask that because and even with the mail-in ballot, because for the last primary, you know, I did the mail-in. They sent me my ballot, but it only had Democratic options on it. Now, I am Democrat. You know, I was independent also until President Obama was running, and then I became Democrat so I can vote in the primary and the general. But how do we know that, you know, the people, the powers that be in the Board of Elections aren't for a particular president? I mean,
well, I can say that what you're doing is you're eliminating the possibility of your ballot getting lost in the mail. That's what you're really doing, because we know that the debacle that this guy has created with the U.S. postal system is designed. I mean, when you take out sorting machines that could sort 35,000 pieces of mail an hour, you know, throughout the country, you take those kind of equipment out and don't replace them. What are you going to do, go back to handheld? That means a lot of things will be delayed. But if you would deliver it, as I did this past primary, I delivered it directly and put it in the box there at the Supervisor of Elections office. Now, once you've eliminated and you got made sure that it's returned, now, you know, the question is, you say, can I expect it's going to be counted properly? Well, let's just say this.
Okay.
Most of them, most electors.
I wanted to go,
the Social Security Office. So
most electors, most supervisor of elections or typically are nonpartisan positions. And even if they are where the Secretary of State is in Florida, which supervises all elections, they may be elected. I guess the Secretary of State here now is appointed. It transitioned, it changed over. And so I would tend to think you're going to have a better shot at making sure your vote is counted than, you know, you're reduced one big risk factor by delivering it yourself to the office and to the box and dropping it in the box yourself, because you can at least know it's in the box. Just like on the day of election when they, you know, here they take your ballot and they feed it into the machine. How do we know that the machine is counting it? Well, it is an act of faith, but at least you have done everything you can do in order to make sure that your vote is counted. So that's my plan. That's what I did for our primary we just had last week, and I did it early. I did it about a month before and made sure that it got there. And that's, like I say, that eliminates anything about the possibility of it being lost in the mail or being, you know, stored back over on the side until they could get to it and miss the cutoff dates. I'll also tell you this, that in Florida you have, if you're a soldier and you're overseas, that your ballot cutoff time is not on the same day of the election, but it's 10 days, up to 10 days after the election for overseas ballots to be received back here in the electoral office.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a quick question.
Anyone else with a question, by pressing star 6, they'll be able to be heard.
Star 6.
And if there's any new callers on the line, by pressing star 6, we'd love to hear from you and just give you a warm welcome. So we can
unmuted.
Love, energy, and vibration that we share here each day. If you don't have an opportunity to do that this morning, we invite you to come back again. We are here Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, including holidays, so we definitely would love to hear from you. If not today, then do come back another day soon. Let's remember all ages are welcome here on our broadcast. So, take the opportunity to invite someone to join us, whether live or on the replay, at 712-432-1085, same PIN, 915-358#. When you invite people to the broadcast, make sure you alert them if they have Metro, PCS, or T-Mobile. Some of the cell phone providers have blocks in regard to conference calling. The bridge line that they can dial through is 206-451-6043. Once you dial that number, you do need to enter the conference call number and the pound sign behind it, then the PIN number and the pound sign again. I know some people had questions, and
muted.
Okay. We get some strange music sometime. I need to apologize for that. But as I open the line back up, you'll need to press star 6 to be heard. But thank you so much, Hubert, for your awesome message. And we know that, and you may not have recalled when I said in the beginning, he has written a book called How to Keep Your Children from Going to Jail. And that was very instrumental, especially in this time and season, that I definitely would love him to come back and discuss more in regard to that as well. So we're going to be looking at some dates, and I know there must be other people that have questions in a number of different areas because he's so well-versed, whether it's in regard to accidents, wills in the states, things in regard to just everything, family law. So, you know, there's a lot of different areas on the table that he is very instrumental on. So if anyone has questions, let me open back up. You'll be heard, and if there's any new callers, then you can say hello as well.
Unmuted. Muted.
Okay, hit star 6 if you have a question or if you want to say, you know, new caller or returning family that wants to say hello.
Unmuted.
Can you hear it?
Yes, who was that?
This is Pastor Bracey. How are you this morning?
Hey, Pastor Bracey. Woohoo!
Yes, I just wanted to say, you know, Hugh, your release of accurate history is a powerful piece in this whole scenario, because we have to become a people that really learn from our past and we're effectively organized for the future. You know, there are times when we do things that don't work, and if you continue to do what you've always done, you're going to continue to give what you always got. So I thank you so much for just bringing us up to date on history and to let us know exactly how important voting is. I know some of us are disenchanted and just feel like, what's the use? But if there's ever a time in history that we as African-American people need to mail it in, carry it in, whatever, we need to get these votes in, because there is a spirit in this nation. It's a spirit of deception.
Mm-hmm.
And while we deal with deception, and while we deal with deception in the realm of the spirit, we also have to do the practical things, because, you know, what Scripture says, faith without a corresponding action is dead, being alone. So we must be people of faith and prayer and believe in God. The word lets us know that he's given us power to tread upon serpents and scorpions, over all the power of the adversary. We can bind and loose. So while we're dealing, here's what I guess I'm trying to say. We need to be moving simultaneously in the realm of the mm-hmm. spirit, and with the spirit of racism and hatred and all this. But at the same time, we need to do what's very practical. You've already mentioned with the coronavirus. You know, it makes no sense for us to go sit up in a show someplace with 500 people when clearly that's not a good thing to do. So we need to be fighting this thing on two fronts, on the spiritual front and on the natural front. And the thing about the spiritual front is only those that are believers have the ability to do that. And since God has given us that ability, now I'm just saying we need to fight this thing hard. You know, the Bible says the fervent, effectual prayer of the righteous availeth much. But it's just as hard as we pray. You're right. We need to be knocking on our neighbor's door, calling our grandkids and our kids, saying, listen, I will take you to pick up your battle. I will take you to deliver it. Whether we need to do, we need to do it, because the Bible says what righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. Right now, we've got a scenario, and we'll be completely honest. There is not righteousness in our government. It just isn't. And we have to be honest about it and then go ahead and deal with it on those two fronts. So thank you, bro. Your knowledge is just a tremendous blessing and adds value to everybody you talk to.
Well, thank you. You got me started this morning with that message you gave us about being grateful. So I, too, am grateful, and I do appreciate you as well.
Bless you, sir.
Hey, you know, I appreciate
go, go,
you both. Okay, Billionaire Linda.
Yes, I want to thank you so much, mighty man of God, Pastor, Judge, Hubert Grimes. You are such a blessing. I was so blessed this morning. Thank you. I'm like flowers. We need to put this and send it out to everybody we know. And there was our powerful Pastor Bracy. Thank you so much, too. I thank my BMS man for all of this great information. I'm the one that says that we're like the Starship Enterprise. We're going places unknown. And this is an example today. Like Pastor Bracy said, we got to do it in the spirit and in the natural. We got to take authority and know who we are and whose we are, and not settle for everything that's being said, because we got the authority and the right to not stand for it. So thank you, thank you, thank you, being there, Master Man Form Family. Thank you, Pastor Grimes. Love you.
Thank you, and love you as well.
Okay, as we're getting ready to close out, Tammy, being there, baby, did you, any questions, any comments, or anything else or before we close? And any closing
remarks? Yes, no, thank you so much, Judge Grimes. Information is so important, and the history really gives us much more to understanding of what we have to do to keep maintaining whatever power we have, and we have power in the vote. Thank you so much. So we'd now like to bring in the closers. So, Esalen is out today, so maybe Linda would take her place. But thank you, Karen, for bringing Judge Grimes in. It was very important right now. And I would suggest to people have people to call back number so that they can let their friends and families hear this information. Very important. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank
okay,
you.
Our closers.
We're going to see about Judge Grimes coming back again to with us soon.
Muted.
Because I know there's so much more to talk about here.
Unmuted.
So much joining us today, Hubert Grimes. He
is
does
there any
have
contact information for him?
And,
oh,
excuse
I'm sorry.
Me?
Go ahead. I think you're about to say.
What did you say, Jabari?
No, I was just asking if there's any contact information for him that he.
Yeah, we need
there.
Telephone.
Yeah.
All website.
Yes. And Hubert, your website, and he does have a law practice in Volusia County. The telephone number for his office is 386-238-9229. Again, his office number is 386-238-9229. And I know sometimes people have different cases and things that they may have questions on, so if you do need a referral or something like that, and let us know. Hubert, is there a website or any other information other than the office number you wanted to provide? And also, let us give you information on the books, how you can get the book, how to keep your child from going to jail, if anyone is interested in that as well.
The email, Karen, is Hugh Grimes, H-U-G-H, Grimes, G-R-I-M-E-S, @gmail.com, H-U-G-H, Grimes, G-R-I-M-E-S, @gmail.com. And you can also, if you'd like to check out our books, we have two that are available on Amazon, both Kindle and hard copy. That particular book is called How to Keep Your Child from Going to Jail. Combination of things that I've learned through the court system and my presiding over juvenile delinquency cases for about 14 years in that particular arena. And then 14 out of the 25 years on the bench, in fact. And then the other book that I have is in an ebook format, which is also available on Amazon, and that one is entitled Perspectives. It is a collection of devotional messages that I've drafted over the years. And Perspectives, no one can take what you have between your ears. And that's based on a phrase my dad used to tell me growing up. He was had a sixth grade education, but as he would often remind me, boy, nobody can take what you got between your ears. So that was a push to make sure that you get as much education as you can, but educate yourself along the way. Okay, that's different from somebody else educating you, from you educating yourself. So that was one of the pushes. So that particular devotional book, I think it's over 50 devotional messages that we have we've drafted over the years. And I'm now working on my third one, which I hope to probably next year before we get that one completed. But the hard copy of that second book, it's been held up for right now, but you can get it through the Amazon Kindle, and it will be under my name.
Awesome. And there is a post on our Facebook page, the forward title, Billionaire Mastermind Forum, and I'm going to add the post in regard to the books and how to get those as well. So appreciate our family going on the page and click the like button, show some comments, some love, and let us know that you appreciate the things that the people are sharing there. Eslyn is in the house.
I have a question. I was trying to get through, but I couldn't get through. But Pastor Grimes, and I did not hear all of the presentation this morning, but I do appreciate that I did hear, because you know that history and I love it. How is it that the evangelicals, and you may have answered it when you were talking about getting the same information and then different people hear it differently, but how is it that so-called evangelicals get it so twisted? I can't understand. I can't comprehend that.
Well, I think there are two answers to that particular question. If we look at it from a scriptural or spiritual perspective, there's scripture that talks about that in the last days that the enemy would deceive even the very elect.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people who themselves, they're elevated because of positions. They're elevated because, they believe they know, they've studied the word, but they still have been bamboozled by this man because he had a way of deceiving even the elect. He got one or two of their guys to support him, and they in turn went out and got others. And one of those guys, gentlemen, is Falwell. And we see that, you know, he's in the media right now for some of his own crazy shenanigans that have gone on. And we see that, truth be told, birds of a feather do flock together. So he and Trump were more than just political allies. And so he in turn used his power of influence to influence a bunch of the evangelical preachers. Secondly, their whole thing has been focused upon one issue, and that is getting rid of Roe v. Wade, which is the Supreme Court case that allowed for women to make choices about their own body. And so they believe that they want to eliminate abortion as an option. If I might circle around and tell you what I perceive that to be, is that if you look at the demographics of our country, we are, according to the anticipated statistics, we're seeing ourselves in somewhere between as quick as 20, possibly no more than 50, and the range probably would be 30 years, we will become demographically a minority country where blacks and browns collectively will be more than the whites in this country. Well, that becomes a threat to their power, their political power base. And so that's why you're seeing all manner of different strategies now being used. One, to devalue the vote. Secondly, to try to push out the immigrants who are coming into the country, because immigrants, quote unquote, they may not be citizens, but they have children who are born here that are citizens. And so you got, you know, and they don't want to see that increase in numbers. So if I might be, my perception of what I see happening is that their whole plan is, if we can keep this thing from occurring with the babies of blacks and browns continuing to grow and expand in much the same way as the Jews did in Egypt, then they will be able to prolong their political power. And so they're making all manner of different restrictions, like I said, about trying to make felons go through additional hoops, returning felons or returning citizens go through additional hoops to vote. So all of these things are part of that. And then on top of that, they want to have a conservative court across the land. Why? If they've got right-wing conservatives, and you listen to the stuff that comes out of these people's mouths, the Clarence Thomases of our country, they will then assure themselves that they will always be in charge, because they're going to impose laws, they're going to pass laws through the legislature. And, I mean, there's a whole story, a study I could give you all about how all these various states are coming up with similar kinds of legislation. But after the elections are over with, the Koch brothers, who are primarily focused upon what we refer to as libertarians, they want to have very limited forms of government. But they will invite all of these newly elected Republicans from states around the country to a retreat. And at that retreat, they will do, usually it's done like in December after the elections are over, they'll wine and dine everybody. But then they'll also give them copies of proposed legislation. And the only thing they got to do is go back and literally write in the name of the state. And it will be things that are designed to do everything from thwarting the vote to making other kinds of very challenging laws, putting laws in place that will help to promote the political power of the existing people. And yet there was one or two who actually took the legislation back, and they never changed the name of on the draft legislation. They didn't change the name. I forget which state it was, but they took like something from Oklahoma, and they took it and tried to implement it in Vermont, and they failed to change the name of the state. I mean, that was kind of crazy, but it shows you that there are all kinds of shenanigans that are going on behind the scenes, and we have to be very crystal clear, because the whole thing about abortion, it doesn't really have anything to do with morality for many of these people. It's got something to do with power. Power. If they can limit the number of white females from having abortions and increase the number of the white population overall, then they will assure themselves to remain in control, particularly those who are not willing to share power, but they're willing only there because they want to go back to where. That's what the Make America Great thing is all about. Mm-hmm.
What? I had
all right,
no...
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, Karen.
One second. Who was that?
This is Vivian.
Muted.
Hi.
Hey. Unmuted.
Hello. Hi, Vivian.
I'm on the line. Thank you for the invite. Thank you, Pastor Graham. I really enjoyed you this morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Vivian.
Thank you. Y'all have a good day. Love y'all.
Okay.
All right, love you too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Closers.
Ellen and Eslin.
Billionaire closers. Ellen. Awesome broadcast.
Thank you, Ellen. Go, Eslin.
This is Eslin, rejoicing in abundance. Just want to share something with you about the Billionaire Mastermind Forum Broadcast Family. We are like a box of chocolate. You never, ever know what you're going to get. But you're always, I mean always, know it's going to be good. Crazy, rich, loving, and happy good. crazy, rich, loving, and happy good. Oh, gosh.
Have a blessed day, everyone, and continue being a blessing. Thank you, Judge Graham.
Thank you so much, Pastor Graham.
Thank you.
What all your titles? God's man, historian, judge, professor, power president, author. Gosh, I mean, you just got everything under your belt.
Oh, yes.
The grace of God.
You're fine.
That's our God's man. God's man. Love you,
Father. Thank you all. God bless you all.
Blessings to you too, my love.
Sir, how you doing?
Good. You called me yesterday.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Anyway, how things going?
Good. No complaints.
Yeah, just to see how you're doing.
Oh, okay. Everything is going fine so far.
All right. How is Sharon?
You doing good?
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, I just finished my walk early this morning.
Perfect. How many miles?
I just do two.
Two, right? 2 to 3 is good, right?
Yeah, I did 1 hour. And then
That's fine. 2 to 3. I do 2 to 3.
Yeah, absolutely. And now I got to start getting back to do some calisthenics, you know, which I haven't done. You know, push-ups and arm and legs and that.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah. So everything going good?
Okay, no problem, man. I'll talk to you later then.
All right, how's Sharon?
She's doing good.
Okay, good.
All right, talk to you later.
Okay, see you later. Okay, thanks. Bye. Thanks.